Welcome to the Ear for Fear podcast, the horror movie podcast that boils and ghouls and dead alike are screaming for. Don't be afraid to listen as Rick and the Creeps bore their way into your brains, slither down onto your arteries, into your still beating hearts.
Hi, welcome to the Ear for Fear podcast. This is the podcast that talks about scary movies or movies trying to be scary. I am Rick, and I got one of the creeps in the house.
Hey, what's up, man?
We got Morris here. Welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Jack. It's been a little bit, huh? Not too long, though. I think we did, what did we do? Top five monster movies?
Yeah, that was the last one we did.
Yeah. So welcome back. Today, you and I are going to be talking about 2019's St. Maud. I think you recommended this one, right?
I did, because this was one of those movies that was, highly anticipated to come out, and then COVID happened, and it was delayed for a year, maybe a year and a half, and then when it finally did come out, I still didn't get to see it yet, and then I think it was on Epix, but I didn't have an Epix subscription, and then it finally was on regular streaming. I think it was on Prime Video, but I think I just at that point I just kind of blocked it out, and didn't watch it.
Yeah, well, a couple things. I remember you had, I think you and I talked about this. Like, you wanted to do an episode on this. Like, I want to say last year or the year before, and then it just, I don't know. I guess it just didn't happen. I didn't know this was like a highly anticipated movie.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah, it was.
Is it A24?
It is A24.
Because I mean, they do a lot of those indie,
Yeah. Well, it was one of those movies that was seen at maybe South by Southwest, and it was screened and got a lot of acclaim. And people are like, you got to see this movie. Mm. And so, the rest of the horror community is like, I want to see this movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that sometimes, when people start hyping up something and it almost doesn't live up to the hype.
Right.
And this is directed by Rose Glass. This was her first, I know she did short films, but this was her first kind of feature.
I think
it's her first feature.
I know, that's right. It is her first feature, but I'm not familiar with their shorts.
I wanted to kind of maybe watch a couple, but I just didn't get a chance because I wanted to see if they were similar, similar style, because most directors, have a similar feel or style when they deal with, with color and atmosphere and stuff like that. Just curious if, if any of her shorts follow suit with that. But you'd only seen it this one time, right?
Yeah.
So me too. And I believe this movie warrants two or three watches to really kind of peel back the layers on this movie. Yeah. Because I miss stuff.
So this is one of those movies that you're kind of in the mind of the narrator, and the narrator being the main character. And it's definitely a character study.
For sure.
As movie that we didn't.
My God, you're going to bring up Pearl, aren't
Pearl,
you?
Pearl, yeah.
Yeah, it's so funny. I was going to say, yeah, I thought this did a great job of a character study, diving into, what's going on versus Pearl, which I know you liked a little more than me, but I truly hated.
Right.
I hated it, and I don't care anyone out there that's listening. I really don't care, because I've been quiet about it.
Yeah.
And I have not made, I haven't said anything. I haven't posted anything on Instagram, but I literally hated that movie. It was a waste of my time. Yeah. I could not wait for it to end. I know you liked it a little more than me.
I did. I liked it a little bit more. I didn't love the movie, and like, you know me, if I don't own the movie, I still don't own the movie, and I doubt that I'll ever buy the movie.
You know what's makes me mad a little bit with Pearl is because I liked X. Mm-hmm. I didn't love X, but I liked X. Mm-hmm. And now when X is on TV, which seems to be a lot these days, I don't even watch it because Pearl pissed me off so much. And then I won't go see what's the new one going to be.
Maxine.
Like, yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I literally don't care.
I actually do care to see Maxine. Do you? Because
That's what they do with you. They always rope your ass in.
But my curiosity with Maxine is, like, she wasn't, I know we're going way off the rails with one movie, you know, than another one. But yeah, with Maxine, I'm just curious because she wasn't like a killer or anything. She killed for survival to get out of that farmhouse area.
Yeah.
But it's like, other than her knowing that she, you know, wanted fame and to be famous. Yeah, it's like, what does she do to gain this, you know, in the next, I think, 6 years, 7 years?
From the point X ended versus, yeah.
Yeah, it's supposed to be 85.
Well, I mean, it's okay. I'm always like, when we go down rabbit holes, that's unintentional. And right. Because we're talking about a character study, which I believe St. Maude is.
Yes.
I just felt they did a better job with it. I thought Rose Glass did a better job with it. Who was the director of X? I always forget.
Ty West.
Ty West, yeah. Thank you. I forgot about that. This is just my opinion. I liked X. Pearl I didn't like, but I thought Rose Glass did a really good job of, you know, of Maude slash Katie. So what's interesting, these are things that I think if we watched it a second or third time, we're going to catch, and we'll jump around a little bit, but you know, we find out later that she changed her name.
Oh, she did.
Yeah. I didn't. I just, who knows? Maybe Maude was just like a nickname or.
No,
actually. You know.
So, yeah, I mean, we can talk about
well,
it.
Well, let's do this. Before we jump into this and kind of, you know, I don't know, dissect it a bit, let's warn the listeners, full spoilers.
1, 2 spoilers coming for you.
Do you want to do a little synopsis, or I can do a quick synopsis? It doesn't matter. I mean, this one's pretty kind of cut and dry, right? I mean, do you want to tackle it, or you want me to tackle it?
I can do a little synopsis.
Yeah, go for it.
So this is a very religious nurse becomes really obsessed with her patient that's dying and trying to save her soul, and has a crazy repercussions from that towards the end.
Yeah.
That
pretty much sums it up. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's run through the characters, I guess. So this was interesting. Okay. Right off the bat, this threw me off because it said Coney Island.
Oh, I looked it up too.
Cause I'm like, what the hell? We know Coney Island from like New York.
Right.
And I'm like, so is there other, cause this is clearly everyone had an accent.
Yeah.
So it's in the UK.
Right.
But I'm like, so there must be, Coney Island must be like this, almost like a business, like an arcade type thing that is in other countries. Right.
Well,
is that what you looked up?
No. I looked up this area, but this was like South Wales, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Yes. I think it was. Because during the movie she speaks Welsh.
Yes.
Because when God speaks, quote unquote God, it's in Welsh.
Yeah. And did you know that was actually later on in the movie when it is God speaking? Yeah. It is her voice.
It's her voice,
but they altered it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did read that.
And the actress is Welsh and she does know Welsh and English.
Oh, okay. So really the main characters, I think, I mean, there's a few others spread out, but you have Maude. Or Katie, you know, but Maude. And then you got Amanda, which is her patient. And Amanda is she's somewhat of a minor celebrity. She was a dancer, a choreographer. She wrote books.
Right.
You know, and she's dying of cancer. She has stage 4, like?
She has stage 4.
Thyroid like, cancer or something?
It's like a spinal cancer.
Spinal cancer?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't know the exact term. But
okay. Yeah. And then Carol, we see Carol would be kind of like Amanda's
friend.
I would say, you could say friend. I think it's more like she hires her, she's almost like a prostitute.
Well, she's a sex worker.
Yes. Amanda is paying Carol to basically do things.
Yeah.
And Carol is substantially younger than Amanda.
And spend time with her. It leads to sex, you know, it's kind of implied in that you can let your imagination run wild of what's going on.
And then really, I mean, the last, I think, main character is Joy, and Joy was an ex-coworker of Maude's.
Yeah, she worked
at that hospital that they just talked terribly of.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems like it was a horrible hospital.
Yeah.
They overworked the staff, they don't have the equipment they need type of thing. It
sounds like they dealt with, you know, death a lot, you know?
Yeah, well, that's how, I mean, that's how kind of, you know, this movie starts, right? We have this scene with Maude in a corner of it looks like a very dark, that's what I will say about this movie. It's very dark, very kind of grungy and dirty.
Yeah.
But I think it needs to be.
Right. And that scene really did kind of you know,
play it really out. Sets the tone for the rest of the movie. Well, she's, you know.
Yeah, and I didn't know if, I don't know if you felt this way, but I didn't know if this was like a flash, you know, like a, like the movie was going to be a flashback and this was the end result.
That's what I had thought.
Yeah, but yeah, that yeah. It was the catalyst of what drove Katie to become Maude.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
This was, I think, when she, and then what I've noticed in the movie with seeing, looking at the ceiling and seeing the cockroach crawl across the ceiling,
yeah, yeah.
That it was almost her looking at that as a sign to not, I don't know if it's her, well, that was the point where she became like a total pious, you know,
yeah.
Savior, Catholic, you know. Where she,
do you think, though, okay, because we're going to see this cockroach later on in the movie. Because mm-hmm. I don't want, and I want to bring it up when we do bring that up, because, right. You know, I have an opinion, and I think maybe you do as well. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was interesting that, you know, the director here, Rose Glass, did as to the message of the cockroach, but we'll talk about it in right. a bit. But Ma, or Katie at the time, because she hasn't changed her name yet, she has killed a patient.
Right.
By accident. She was given her, what was it, CPR or something?
CPR and caved in her chest.
Caved in her chest.
Yeah.
And this devastated her. She basically lost her job, had to change her name because she couldn't get any work.
Yeah.
So she changed her name to Maude, joined a basically kind of a private thing where they do in-home nursing.
Yeah. Like a hospice care.
Yeah.
Well, did you know that Katie means purity?
No.
And did you know that Maude means powerful battler?
Powerful what?
Battler.
Oh, battler. Oh, yeah, no.
I didn't know that. Battler warrior, you know.
So there's, it's interesting because we have this playing in the background right now. I didn't, so there's a scene, and I want to talk about, because there is stuff, again, I missed. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a scene where Maude is laying in bed, and I just thought they were scratches.
Mm-hmm.
Well, people think they're stretch marks.
Stretch marks.
So, okay, let me ask you this, though. Do you think that she had had a baby and lost it, and the baby died, or do you think she gave up the baby?
Could be both.
Because then I was thinking, well, then it would make sense on why she's, let's say the baby died.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing she could do about it. She right. couldn't control that, right? And so now she feels like that's why she's become so religious, is that she's trying to save the soul of, say, Amanda.
Right.
Because she couldn't save her baby.
Well, I think, too, with what happened with her, you know, accidentally killing her patient, you know, and then
yeah.
finding that as the sign of becoming this very, you know, fanatical religious person, you know, she's on a mission, you know, it's yeah. like, I think that her life before it, and it's kind of implied before, and even with this, I think her stretch marks is that maybe she was kind of like a loosey goosey.
Well, yeah. I think as this movie plays out, right. we find out she was a little bit of a harlot.
Yeah. Cause at first you're thinking, okay, well, she's probably just a repressed person that's never had sex. She's probably a virgin, you know, but that doesn't really come out to be later. Yes. It's like, I remember you, you know.
Yes, right. Yeah,
and then yeah, hanging out with Joy, maybe they went out and probably picked up guys at bars and, you know, probably did that kind of stuff.
I have a feeling that, I don't know if that was the case with Joy. I have a feeling.
Maybe not with
Joy. I have a feeling with Joy that it was just a working relationship. I think she's a loner.
Right.
And I think she's always been a loner. But it doesn't mean
that she wasn't
promiscuous and right. was, you know, because we find that out later. But, you know, she gets this job taking care of Amanda.
Right.
And we get immediately, so when the one nurse is leaving and Maude is to take over,
yeah,
she asks her about Amanda, and she basically says, well, she's a cunt.
Yeah.
So you immediately, we have this like foundation of, okay.
Oh, who Amanda is.
Amanda is.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't, you know, it doesn't take long. I think there are times where you feel like Amanda it really likes Maude and vice versa, and they're connecting. But I think when it's all said and done, she's almost making fun of her religious beliefs.
Well, I think there's a lot of layers going on there with their relationship. When you think about it.
Did you feel the sexual?
Oh, absolutely.
A little bit of that. So, but on who? But who? Was it both of them feeling that?
Both of them.
Both of them.
But okay. But maybe more overtly, but behind the scenes, more Maude against
Amanda. Like she was somehow smitten with her a little bit. Yeah.
She, you know, it's like, okay, well, you know, she was like looking at her books and looking at her videos and,
yeah,
and kind of like getting to know who Amanda was or is, was.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Well, if you kind of think about it, yeah, what more so was, because she's dwindling away here. She's stage four here.
Oh yeah. So yeah, it's odd that, because you can tell that this is a story where there's a lot of repression, you know, there's a lot of, where religion comes into the forefront, you know, where it's almost, you know, religion's has a history of, you know, for the better good, you know, for the greater good. And that's why, but as we know that there's a lot of persecution and things in our history, the history of the world, where religion, bad shit has happened for the sake and for the name of doing it for religion.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
this is one of those cases.
I think so. I think that's what the message is here. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and again, we've talked about previous movies, religious movies on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And we've always said, and we'll continue to say, everyone has their beliefs. I'm not here to tell you you're wrong or right. And whatever you believe, I totally respect it. Now, right, me, on my end, I'm just not a religious person. I never have been, never will be. But again, you know, some other person is believes in that. All the world to you, man. I am never going to ever put down anyone's beliefs. But I believe in this movie, this is a dig at religion.
Yeah, I think so.
I believe that was the intent here.
Yeah.
You know, and so because there's so like Amanda, when so they kind of connect, right? And she does her normal, you know, nurse duties, right? You know, getting her to stretch, you know, checking vitals, all these things. But, you know, and there's a scene where Amanda asks her about what saint, you know, because she has that little necklace,
right? And it's Mary Magdalene,
yeah. And then she calls her little savior,
yeah.
You know, my little savior,
because she's
wanting
to save her soul.
She wants to save her soul, yeah. And then
before she dies,
yeah.
Especially since Amanda's like asking questions,
yeah.
You know, she's thinking, oh well, since Amanda's asking these questions, I'm gonna give her my thoughts on this,
yeah.
And I'm on a mission. I'm on a mission to save this woman.
I never felt that Maude ever sugarcoated her beliefs at all.
Not
she
at
was
all.
Very straightforward.
Right. Yeah.
This is, I'm an open book. This is, in a sense,
right,
this is what I believe, and I'm going to let you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, you know, she was afraid of what Amanda would think, because, you know, you get this picture of Amanda that she's this, you know, this certain type of person. And I think deep down she really is,
right.
You know, she had this life. She probably made, you know, lots of money. She traveled everywhere. She had, you know, she probably had fans and people gawking over her, but now there's a scene when Maude is in that restaurant, mm-hmm, and I don't know if you remember this, but she says something like, how did Amanda end up here? Because she looks at the gang of characters in this restaurant, and
in this city,
yeah,
or this town.
She doesn't understand, like,
yeah,
a person like that Amanda portrays herself to be, and maybe was,
right.
How does she end up here?
Because it's kind of like this kind of seaside town is kind of like a debaucherous kind of town.
Kind of, right?
Yeah. But at the same time, it seems like that's where Katie's from, too.
Yeah, but Katie makes more sense than Amanda being there.
Because she's...
Or Maude, or right, whatever we're gonna say.
Yeah, we'll call her Maude.
But I mean, she seems more fitting,
right,
than Amanda being there. Amanda, I get this that she, and I think there's a scene where one of her friends he says something about, you know, I want to get her to move back to London.
Right.
That seems more fitting of,
right,
Amanda, how she portrays herself.
Right.
You know,
this seaside town, when she's looking at the characters and she's in the restaurant. It's almost like she, and then seeing the homeless people, and
yeah,
you know, and she, somebody asked for money before Maude, you know, or
oh yeah,
oh, the guy outside, asking, yeah, somebody else for money before he asked Maude for money, and he's like, you know, fuck off or whatever he said, and then she gives him money, and she's like, bless your soul,
yeah,
and he's like, bless you back, darling, you know, like, in a sense he was thanking her, but in a sense he was kind of mocking her.
A little bit. A
little bit.
I feel like there's a lot of that going on in this movie.
Yeah. But this town's almost like a Gomorrah, you know, almost like a a sinful place, a city of sin.
Yeah, it feels that way. Mm. It feels dirty. Mm. It feels grungy. Mm-hmm. It's very dark. It's very muted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, colors are muted.
Yeah, but there's a scene where so Amanda, you know, we think Amanda and kind of Maud have connected, and then Amanda gives her that book, that William Blake book.
Right.
She's thinking this is great, but. I think it's really a jab at Maud, because William Blake, and I didn't really read up on this, but I'd heard he had questioned religion and kind of made, not necessarily made fun of religion. Right. So this was Amanda's way of kind of taking a little jab at her.
Even with some of the pictures in the book, mm-hmm. you know, they're like exaggerations of
organized religion and a dig at maybe organized religion. But Maud doesn't see it that way. She just thinks it's a nice gift.
A nice gesture, especially since she wrote in it, you know.
She did, little savior.
That she even cut out later and hung on a wall.
Was it me or did the actor that played Amanda look a little bit like Sigourney Weaver?
Oh, yeah.
The whole movie, I was thinking Sigourney Weaver.
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But I was just thinking about
it. But I want to say they're all British, Welsh, you know, which is, you know... I think the director, you know, they're all of that region.
Yeah.
So I think she just probably chose people of you know.
But there's a scene where Maud is kind of walking the city.
Right.
And then she runs into her ex-coworker, Joy.
And this is where we first learn that her name's not really Maud. It's like,
because
Katie,
she's calling her Katie.
And like, then you could see her like trying to avoid her.
Yes.
And then when she finally does see, she's like, oh. Hi, you know, you know, kind of, you know, does the safe face kind of face, turning around, you know, like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I don't think Joy was going to let her go. She was kind of running up to her.
Yeah.
But she asked her what she was.
And it seemed like Joy kind of really did care about her as a person.
I think so. But, you know.
Or more curious than anything.
Curious. I think there's a little caring, but I almost think part of it was guilt. Because I think they saw that Katie. Mm-hmm. Or Maud had a problem, and they didn't help her.
Right.
They weren't there to support her, and then look what happened.
Right.
And I think so. It's part guilt. Like, it's okay. What can we do now? And she just happens to see her.
Yeah.
And you know, here's
she even said, you know, like, you're working as a nurse. What? Where? Even after what happened? You know, like.
Yeah.
And then that brings us back to the first scene. It's like, oh, well, that was something that really did happen.
Yeah. And she gives her number, like, call me and we can hang out, which, you know, we find later on Maud thought that was strange. Mm-hmm. I just feel Maud is a loner.
Yeah.
Because Amanda keeps saying throughout, you've got to be the loneliest, like, you know, girl I've ever, you know, known or, you know. And it's kind of sad. Like, you can see that Maud wants to connect with other people, say people of her age.
Right.
But she doesn't know how to do it. Like, there's that scene in the bar,
mm-hmm.
you know?
You're right.
There's a scene in the bar where she goes to the bar and...
she's like chuckling, because the little group to the side of her are laughing, and she's trying to include herself by laughing too. And they look over at her like she's crazy.
Yeah, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
We don't even know you. And then immediately you could tell she feels uncomfortable.
And then she kind of like retracts that in a way, you know? Yeah. And then she... gives that guy a handy.
Dude, she basically just sees a guy from across the room, gives him a look, and next thing you know, she's giving him giving him a handy, and I, dude, where was that? It looked like it was in public.
No,
like, near the bathroom.
Well, it looked like it was down the hall near the bathroom, yeah.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. But then she gets her drink on, and then she gets, because doesn't she see, like, she slowly starts to see, like, she, throughout the movie, she feels like a presence of God, right?
Right.
Like, almost orgasmic.
So, yeah, the way that this movie plays out, there's two ways you can look at it. One way is that everything that's happening is real. You know, everything that's happening is actually happening, and she is getting visions, real visions. You know, she really does, you know, when... people like Maud, they say, well, you know, I heard God talk to me.
Yeah.
You immediately think, okay, nutso. But then you think, okay, well, you know, is you as the viewer kind of questioning, maybe she really is hearing God. But then there's the other camp where it's like everything that you're seeing play out is just playing out in Maud's head.
That's for the most part, that's what I had thought through the movie. yeah. was I never thought that God was talking to her. I just felt that she believed so much that she was, these were visions right. that she was.
I was 60-40 on it until the very last scene.
Oh, really?
We'll talk about the last scene.
But I mean, so just so we don't jump too far ahead.
Yeah.
You know, Maude thinks that Carol, who's this, let's just call her a whatever she is.
Sex worker,
thank you. Is too much for Amanda. Mm-hmm. You know, Amanda's sick. And Maude kind of butts in and says, can you please not, you know, please don't come here anymore.
Because I'm trying to save her soul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, and then there's this, and then you could tell there's this change in demeanor of Amanda because she gets this phone call.
Right.
We assume it's Carol telling her,
oh, totally.
Tattling on Maude.
Right.
And then she's like,
oh, can you go to the store and get me this, you know, party stuff?
She throws this big old party. And there was a scene that I thought was fucking fantastic, dude. And I don't know if you caught it. But there's a scene where, so Maude is, you know, she's preparing food and whatever else for the party. And it's mm-hmm. it's a big party. And the cake gets lit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the friend takes the cake out and Maude is just in the little... almost in this little near the door, but it's all dark.
Yeah, and you can only see like the just ever so the soft glow on her face where she's just peeking out of the darkness.
But I felt it was like kind of this,
like she's left out.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's exactly what I was feeling. That probably she felt this way her whole life.
Yeah.
And that was, and I thought how that was captured in that one scene was just, it was great, dude. Like it was probably my favorite scene. It was the one scene that just stood out because I get that she's alone and all of these things and probably has been. And here she is at this party around people that definitely think they're better than her.
Right.
And she's, and just for this, you know, five to 10 seconds for them singing Amanda, you know, happy birthday. She's just alone. She's just pushed aside a sense in this little dark little like entryway where this door is. And I just thought it was brilliant.
You know, what's funny is the party did remind me a little bit of the party from when we talked weeks ago about Rosemary's Baby's party.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Where it's kind of like, you know, Andy Warhol, like the model scene, you know, like all these, you know, uppity, you know, Manhattan types, you know.
Yep.
And
yeah, all of them probably coming from London.
Right.
You know, and coming. Yeah.
Yeah. Just to come to, you know, spend time with her at this, you know, her little. And the funny thing is the way that, you know, since we're talking about this little town, Amanda's house is up on kind of a hill.
It is. It looks down on everybody.
Down on everybody. Yeah. Almost like a. you know, like a Gothic castle in a way.
Yeah.
And almost like she's a queen, you know, because like you think of the hierarchy of even, you know, the Great Britain and the Isles, you know, the aristocrats always, or not the aristocrats, but the royalty were always looking over the peasants.
Up high, looking down. Yeah. And that's,
I love that way that was framed.
Oh, for sure, man. And that's, But then, so they have this party, and Amanda makes a few comments to you know, really kind of putting Maude down and
they started making fun of her. Everybody.
And everyone did.
They're and putting then, like a little veil on her, like she's a little nun, you know.
And then she gets pissed and slaps Amanda, and
that's it's over. Her job's over.
Yeah, she basically gets canned from the job.
So this is the second part where I think that Maude.
We'll just call her Maude. Yeah,
that there's a shift. So the first part was when she lost her patient. The second part is now that she, you know, she loses her job and she loses her cool, and there's a shift in her, you know, the way that she's dealing with stuff.
Well, she's questioning a lot of stuff, right? Because she thinks that she has this, God has a plan for her.
Oh, yeah.
But nothing's happening.
Right.
Like, she thinks she's seen things. Like she, there's a scene where she burned her hand on the stove what did you think that was? Just to kind of feel something?
It's called mortification.
Mortification.
So what it is, it's suffering through belief.
Okay. There you go.
The same thing with the tacks in the shoes.
Yeah, that's a little later.
You hear of like people like whipping themselves, like self-flagellation.
Oh,
okay. Where you there's truth in suffering. You know, you're a better believer if you go through suffering. Mm. So these are things that Maude does. You've seen, like, even on Moon Knight, the character of Ethan Hawke, he breaks glass and he puts it in the shoes and then he walks.
Oh, that's right.
He walks because he's like, and even though that it was about, you know, Egyptian gods,
yeah,
it's like, I'm doing this suffering because my belief in the gods are so...
So that's really what she was doing right here.
I'm here because I'm just a sacrifice for you because you, you know, that's the feeling there.
That makes sense.
And going back, you know, we saw little glimpses of signs to Maude. So Maude feels this feeling of God inside of her, talking to her, and even the conversation that she has with Amanda, and she's like, no, you know, God talks to me in his voice inside my head. And you see her like filled with the spirit. She falls back down, you know, like on the stairs, or she...
Oh, that's right. But it felt very orgasmic, like she was...
Right, like it's almost like
God was inside her, literally.
Right.
I mean, that's what it felt like. There was several scenes of that. And they both... There was a scene where both her and Amanda felt it.
Well, I think Amanda was like... Amanda's a little bit more of a complicated character, because I think that we understand Katie more, even though she's the loner and she's the, you know, she's got multiple things going on. Amanda's like, you know, done a life of doing what she wants to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, sex or drugs or whatever.
Just whatever, traveling.
Like,
you know, the finest things probably.
But I think since she's at the end of her life and she knows she's going to die soon, that she's like, okay, well, you know, what do I do? You know, she's not saying this, but she's like, what do I do, Maude? You know, like, you could see her looking at Maude as Maude's like filled with the spirit, falling onto the couch. And then she does the same thing. She kind of looks over at her and kind of mimics the same thing. And she's feeling it too. And then you could see that little hand embrace where they, where they touch each other's hands.
Yeah.
And it's almost like an attraction.
Yeah.
But then also like a shared feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm not sure if Amanda's, you know, really feeling it or she wants to feel it.
I don't know. Yeah. That's what I was torn by. Like, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
Or is it just her way of like somehow making I don't know.
Fun of her, but at the same time, it's like, is this what I need to do to be saved? You know, because
maybe,
you know, because I'm scared. And she even admits to Maude that she's, you know. So what happens when it's all over? Am I gonna talk to somebody?
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, yeah.
So it's a little difficult. And then I guess we'll go after she loses her job. She feels like God's abandoned her because she's not getting the...
She's questioning, like, I think there's a... I forget what she says. It's like,
I'm doing everything
you told me to do and nothing's happening. Like, there's a scene where she's when she had burned her knuckles, she kept peeling that thing.
She's peeling the scab.
Oh my God. Several scenes of that.
Yes, and but she's then picking
there's a,
at it.
There's a scene where she's walking the beach and she's near a pier. And it's upside down.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I thought this was brilliant because it's, you know, when you're not sure, you're confused and you're sure not what's going on and you're questioning your beliefs, you feel sometimes out of whack, right? Mm-hmm. Upside down. You know, everything isn't the way it's supposed to be. And I'd love that scene as well, man.
And then she sees Amanda with like her new nurse.
Like right up near the water.
And
And then she goes to the bar. She jerks off the one guy and then she runs into some other guy because she gets hammered.
Yeah.
She runs into some other guy, some bigger guy, and then they end up screwing.
Yeah, the next scene.
But you could tell she's really not into it. Like, you can tell, like, because he eventually said something like, I remember you.
Before that. So she was riding him, you know.
Yeah.
Well, we'll say that she was, you know.
That one scene.
Yeah. And then she's like, done with it, and then he's like, you know, I remember you, and then she like lays down to her side, and then he comes up from behind her and she's saying no.
Yes. Yeah.
So in his head, in his drunken stupor, he's thinking that it's okay to continue.
But wasn't there a scene where she visualized her accidentally crushing his
and that's why she jumped off. That's right.
because she visualized, you know, at the beginning of the movie where she, you know, caved in the chest of her patient. She's thinking she just caved in. I actually thought that was a pretty cool scene.
Yeah.
That she caved in the chest to him, and then she, yeah, she got startled. And,
yeah.
And, but yeah, but then he says something like, you know, you, I remember you.
Yeah,
and
you were
basically
with my mate.
Yeah, basically implying that she gets around, or she yeah. used to get around, that she has this, again, that's where, like, the baby was. Did she get pregnant because she was screwing around a lot?
That's how I kind of took it. Maybe, you know, maybe she didn't have a steady guy, and maybe she got pregnant from an accident.
Maybe.
And then maybe, who knows, did she give it up? Did it die?
You know? I don't know. Yeah. I don't think it's ever really told to us.
I think it's left for our interpretation of what happened.
But dude, she's lost. She is, you could tell she's been lost for a while. She's been alone for a while, and it's sad. And
it is.
But I believe the actress playing Maud just does a fantastic job of conveying all of that. Oh my God,
dude, she's so
that.
Good.
She really is, man. Like, but then
she comes off really sweet, but when she's, like, backed into a corner of things, she comes off very strong, you know?
Yeah. Well, especially when it comes to, I think it, she teeter-totters a little bit with the religious stuff. But when right. she is on the side of the religion, oh, yeah, she is, you know, she's full board on this thing.
This this character, too, and even this movie, not in the way it's shot, but it reminded me a lot of, we were talking about Pearl, you know, as a character study and a lonely person. Lucky McKee's movie May, you know.
Oh, I was thinking of May as well.
Yeah.
Morris. I'm glad you brought that up.
Where she's kind of this lonely character and wants to fit in and is so incredibly awkward.
Yeah.
And doesn't really know how.
For sure, dude. When I was watching this, I was thinking of May.
May, yeah.
It's not as, because May is very uncomfortable.
Oh, seriously.
Super uncomfortable. Yeah. This one is not as bad where.
No.
You know, she doesn't, I mean, she tries, but it's only for a second.
Right.
May is trying a lot throughout most of the movie, and it's like, oh, man, yeah, that's so funny you brought that up, yeah. Which is another good movie.
Yeah.
That could be a movie we do down the road. But yeah, I mean, I think she in a sense, kind of reconnects with this whole faith thing, because she's definitely questioning it, but then reconnects. I don't know. Did something happen where, give me a sign, and was it the cockroach again?
Yeah, or? This is where she goes after she had sex with the guy, and she feels lost. She comes home, and remember, she's like throwing up on her floor.
Oh, and is that when she had the seizure?
Yes.
Because there was fireworks.
Yes.
Okay, so interesting about that. Okay.
And then she's floating.
She's floating. Okay, yeah. So we see this, and I'm like, okay. And I saw the floating. I'm like, okay, I still think it's in her head.
Right.
And then I think I was reading something about when, you know, because obviously, and I don't know if the seizure was just because of what happened or was because of her drinking and then the fireworks. And because some people will get seizures from fireworks and stuff popping and lights. But I know when you have a seizure that your brain cells, they fire, I guess, more rapidly than, say, normal. And when that happens, you imagine stuff.
Yeah.
And I think this is what we're seeing with her, is her imagining that she's floating.
This is like the third break in the movie where she breaks. You know, there's like mental breaks throughout this movie. This is the third one. And this is the one where I think she's reached sanctum, you know?
Sanctum, yeah. Yeah. That's good. I like that.
Right. So, yeah, she's, like, throwing up on the floor. And then she wakes up the next morning. She, like, cleans it all up. And then that's where she's going through the book and cutting out all the pictures.
Yeah.
And did you notice one of the pictures is the red dragon picture that was the obsession of that Dollarhide serial killer in Red Dragon, the movie?
No, yeah. I didn't know that.
So it was
from the book that Amanda had given her? Okay.
It was like one of the pictures was the red dragon.
Yeah. But didn't she like have, like, she had acetone and like all of these, like.
Oh, yeah. She was washing her face in acetone and just weird stuff. Which and why did she have acetone? Was she a photographer?
No, she wasn't a photographer. I think it's just maybe she felt that it had cleansed her somehow or something.
I don't know.
But it was acetone and something else. Was it bleach or something, dude? I don't know if it was bleach or.
I don't know.
Was it like.
But she was like taking a. Like a facial bath, and this is before everything else. But
does Joy? When does? Because you were talking about the thumbtacks.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Like, like when she, again, the whole pain thing, right? You know, and she puts all these thumbtacks, and then she puts it in her shoe, and she, puts her feet in, and then she there's a scene where she's walking through the city, but gingerly because it's hurting her. But again, is it about, again, what you're saying? It's just about feeling, in a sense, not really sacrificing,
it's
but...
It's a pain through suffering.
Pain through suffering.
Yeah. I'm really a believer, and I'm willing to do this for my belief.
Yeah.
I'm going to suffer.
Ah, fuck that, dude.
Yeah.
Damn, that reminded me of when I was a kid and I accidentally stepped on one, and holy shit, that hurt. It was right on the heel of my foot. Dude, it was one of the worst pains I felt.
Oh, my God.
On the heel, and I was like, God damn, dude.
So this is a crazy thing about... So with Catholicism, there's different factions of Catholicism throughout the world, and then the faction in the Philippines during the Lent season. The Lent season would be like the weeks up before... Good Friday, which is the day that Christ died, after he was sacrificed on the cross, and then he rises 3 days later, and that's why we have Easter Sunday, because he's the risen Christ. So, in the Philippines, they do the reenactment of the crucifixion, and they actually have somebody physically nailed to a cross.
Oh, fuck that.
Yeah, they
you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So that's almost like a form of this, mortification my belief is so strong, I'm going to do suffering for my belief.
Wow, dude, that's crazy. Yeah. The cockroach again.
Oh,
did you like how, cause every time we see the cockroach, I think it's her, the cockroach is almost a symbolism of God, which I thought was very interesting.
Or like a messenger of God.
Yeah.
The voice of God.
Like they've literally taken the grossest insect or bug is, and somehow have related it to, like you said, God or a messenger of God. I'm like, of course, that was intentional.
And then you see the wall that she had cut up this book and put it up on her wall with all the different things and the cross and everything. And then you see the almost like a wave in the wall.
Yes, like a ripple of
A ripple. And then that's where she gets up, walks over to the wall. And then she hears the voice of God speaking to her, and she's like, what?
In Welsh. It sounds like a very deep man's voice, but
it's the actress speaking in Welsh.
Really, she's just imagining all of this. Mm-mm. She's, however God, I guess God would sound in her head. It's, it's talking to her, and so,
And she's asking the questions. Well, what is it? Where's the sign? And he's like, you've known all along.
Yeah.
You know what to do.
So Joy comes and visits her, her ex, I guess ex coworker.
Coworker, yeah.
Just to check on her.
Yeah.
And
she's like, I'm sorry I didn't, go that night that you called me, to go out for drinks. And, I was just, beat tired and whatnot. And, I'm just coming. And it's weird. Joy's reaction was almost like she expected the apartment and Maud's look to be like it. I think if it was me, I'd be like, "What's going on here?" She didn't seem too fazed.
She said something like, "Oh, this is nice."
Yeah.
Kind of like,
yeah.
What else are you supposed to say?
Right, because it's very clean, but it was very,
The thing is, like,
she lives in a shitty place.
I always think about stuff like this when you're put in a position where you can't really say what you mean.
Right.
It's like, let me give you an example, and I think I mentioned this to you before. When someone brings a baby to show to you, and it's an ugly-ass baby, what the hell are you supposed to say?
Oh, you got an ugly-ass kid.
You can't say that, right? So what you do, instead of saying, oh my God, he or she is so cute, you comment on their shoes or their outfit.
Right.
Or, oh my God, they're so big.
Yeah.
Because, dude, I have been presented with that. Where people have showed me their ugly ass baby, and I'm like, oh my God, this baby's so ugly, but I can't say that. I'm like, oh my God, that outfit is so cute. Or what I used to do, I'm not kidding you, I used to do this at one of my old jobs, like years and years ago. I remember this woman brought in her, this sounds so terrible, and I hate even saying this, but the baby was not that, oh my God, cute. And I know people will go, well, all babies are cute. No, they're not. And so I would purposely, like when she would bring the baby in, I would purposely go in the warehouse and avoid any interaction because I just didn't want to. Does that sound terrible?
No.
Does that sound mean?
I mean, you were distancing yourself from
being from an awkward, like,
from putting yourself in that position.
Yeah.
Because you already had your feelings about it and you're like, no, I'm not going to engage.
Yeah. I mean, it's better to do that.
Well, it's not like it's your friend.
No, she was just a coworker.
Right.
Like, I barely even knew her, and she would bring, you know.
So you didn't know her or anything.
No.
So you did the right thing.
Okay, good. All right. I hope this doesn't come across. I'm sure other people that are listening going, you know what, I've been in that situation where, yeah, I've been around an ugly baby, and you just have to deal with it and try to compliment their outfit or
Here's
something.
Ugly baby.
But, I mean, going back to, you know, Maude, it's like, Joy's like, well, yeah, she's like, I don't think she was surprised, right? Yeah,
no.
Like, knowing how Maude is.
Yeah.
Or how Katie was or whatever. Yeah. It's like, this kind of makes sense. But she could tell that she's a little bit worried, you know?
Right.
And then Maude does this thing where she goes to the window and is just kind of tilted her head and staring out. It's kind of creepy. And then sees the clouds make that same swirly.
Oh, like the beer glasses.
Yeah. And so like, oh, this is a sign. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
It's the heavens. Yeah. Waiting to talk to me or maybe, you know, take me away.
Sure. Yeah. She takes it. Yeah. Anything that's happening. All this is in her friggin' head.
Yeah. And Maude doesn't even dress herself. I think she was in panties and a shirt with no bra.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was in greeting Joy at the door. You know, she was just like, as she was.
Doesn't she go, she, at some point she, goes, yeah, where she, almost kind of befriends the Amanda's new nurse.
She notices the new nurse is down by the docks, you know, and she sees her on the bench eating her lunch, so maybe taking a break from, you know.
Yeah, from nursing.
From, yeah.
From caring.
Because she knows that she has a life, that woman has a life too, so she probably leaves at night and goes to do stuff on her own.
Yeah.
And yeah, she sees her on the bench, and she goes to kind of talk to her, and this girl has no idea who she is.
None at all.
So, but she's just asking her, kind of trying to relate to her just to kind of pick her brain a little bit.
Yeah. To see how, kind of partially to see how Amanda is doing and what her state is right now. And, you know, and she's gotten worse. But I also think, I mean, does she use an opportunity to kind of, cause I mean, we know at some point here, she's going to go back to Amanda's in the evening. Doesn't she throw on like a sheet?
Oh yeah.
She goes out of the house and just a sheet and maybe.
Well, it's you see in the old Renaissance paintings of you know, godly saints, they're always wearing like robes and vestments and sheets and things like that it's not really a sheet, but you know, it's a vestment garb. It's like robes, like heavenly clothing.
Yeah.
And that's where she kind of utilizes that and does that.
Yeah, goes to Amanda's house, gets in because the other nurse has left for the evening.
Yeah, she waits for her to leave.
Yeah.
And this is the part of the movie that felt very creepy to me.
Yeah.
Just seeing her go to the house, because you know what's going to happen. Even not knowing the story and not reading up on it, I'm thinking, okay, well, this is not going to be good for Amanda.
Well, yeah, I guess for sure. Like, we feel the end result here is a man is going to die. We just don't know in which way. Yeah.
I almost thought that maybe the funny thing, I didn't even know how this ended, and we'll talk about that later, but I almost thought that she was going to give her a cleansing, either, like, drown her or baptism of fire. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I was thinking she was going to burn her to death.
Oh my God. I didn't even think about that, but yeah.
Because the lighter kept coming into play throughout the movie, the lighter that would never work. Like when she was trying to light the candles on the cake and
that's something else.
Yeah. And then you always see like some of the pictures that she cut out. There was this one guy that was on fire.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, well, that's gotta be it. You know, that's gotta be, saving Amanda's soul. It's going to be like a baptism of fire.
Yeah.
I obviously was wrong.
Yeah.
But I didn't know, but I was thinking, oh God, she's going to go there. She's going to burn Amanda and she's going to burn down the house. But
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. She waits to the nurse leaves. And then the way that she kind of creeps out of the darkness and then and kind of floats up the stairs.
Yes.
It almost had that weird kind of, Hereditary kind of feeling where you focus on something, or even Michael Myers coming out of the darkness, you know, to stab, you know, Laurie Strode. It's just, you, you know that they're there and you know they're going to appear, and then you see her like appear and the white of her face, the white of her, yeah, her garments, and then she's kind of like floating up the stairs to the front door. It's very creepy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she goes inside.
Yeah.
Amanda doesn't seem too surprised to see her.
Yeah.
Yeah, but again, she's probably so sick and worn down that maybe that's the reaction, a normal reaction.
Because she did look more worn than Maud saw her last time.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She was, you know, she had
she looks a breathing like she's tube. On her, yeah, looks like she's on her final kind of leg here. But she tries to, I think she tries to put holy water on her.
Yeah.
And Amanda's not having that.
Right. It's almost, you know, like in Maud's head, it's like, okay, well, she's refusing, you know. But Amanda seems very repentive to Maud. Like, I'm sorry I treated you so bad.
She does a bit.
Yeah.
But then I think too, you know, when Amanda, I think she starts to laugh or giggle about how Maud's, how strong she feels about her faith.
Right. And she's like, I'm here to save you.
Yeah.
And then she's like, oh, honey.
I know. But then that's the insecurity of Maud comes out.
Right.
And she starts to question it. And then Amanda turns into like,
I really do think before that time, yeah, I really do think Amanda did say these things. So the part where, yeah, she's like, oh, honey, he's not there.
Yeah, no, I believe she, yeah, I believe she said that, like, as well.
You,
yeah,
got to stop with this, you know. And then I think that's where Maud's head switches it. And then everything we see, you can either interpret it that it actually happened, which I don't believe it did. And it's all in Maud's head.
Oh, like the voice,
yeah,
where
she turns into a demon.
Almost like a demon, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, she turns into like an exorcist demon.
And kind of put, and like basically shoves Maud across the whole room, hits like,
yeah,
I don't know, the back of the wall or something. And then
her jaw opens up, yeah, like a demon.
And then she says something to her like, God, that's all it took to make you question your belief?
Yeah.
Like, that was nothing. And then she jumps up with like a pair of scissors and just
starts
stabbing her to death, basically.
Yeah, right in the neck. So, you know, Amanda saw God quicker than she was going to.
She did. Yeah.
I almost think it was kind of a, in an odd way, kind of a mercy killing from,
you
from,
think so?
From
like Maud felt that she was doing Amanda a favor by putting her out of her misery.
But I do think she reacted too. She thought,
oh, absolutely.
Amanda was a demon. Yeah. You know, and it's like, oh, well, you know, I don't, yeah, want to be tested by a demon.
But I wonder, too, sometimes I wonder, like, okay, with, you know, that we are seeing all this through kind of Maud's eyes, mm-hmm, right? But how do we know that Maud, you know, the words that, you know, Amanda said, maybe she really didn't see all of that stuff. We're just seeing that,
right,
you know, and that her reaction was, well, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, like, how dare you, you know, and then that was her reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You put me down. You made me feel this way.
Right.
All of these things. And then that could have been her reaction.
Right.
We're just seeing the other side.
We're seeing what's in
we think we
in
think
Maud's
it's
head.
In Maud's, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just overthinking this.
No, I think you're onto something, because we did the very last scene, there's the interpretation of what Maud sees in her head, and then there's that final flash of exactly what happened.
Because doesn't she go back home and she sees the wings?
Yeah.
Like the angel wings on her?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The angel wings are like appeared, and obviously they were like CGI'd on there.
But I actually thought it looked kind of cool.
It looked cool.
I did. Yeah. I had no problem with the way it looked at all.
So yeah, this is her second part of martyrdom, you know, saintdom.
Sanctum, yeah, yeah. Because at this point, I mean, she goes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So she after she did that, she does her walk home all bloodied via Carrie, you know.
Yeah,
but she's almost
the Carrie walk. I know. I was thinking the same thing.
But she's smiling. So she's grinning like she did something she was supposed to do, and
yeah,
she almost looks like she's floating, and it had almost a little bit of a, again, I'm going to reference Hereditary in a yeah, weird way, that she's like just kind of gliding, yeah, you know, and gliding home, and almost, yeah, looks like she's almost off the ground.
Yeah,
you know,
it did feel that way.
And she, yeah, had this gleeful look on her face.
Well, like she's felt like she's, in a sense, accomplished her mission.
Right.
Like she's in her eyes, she saves Amanda's soul, which was really her intent.
Right. And you can almost say, oh, okay, well, the movie could end here, but it definitely doesn't.
And I'm kind of glad it didn't.
Yeah, me too.
Because I'll tell you, I really did like this ending. Like, I thought they nailed the ending.
Oh, and another movie it reminded me of when she looked gleeful and she was smiling. Mm. And I know you hate this movie, mm-hmm. but The Witch. At the very end when she's floating off the ground and she's smiling and she's... It kind of had a similar feel to it.
Yeah, yeah. The Witch. Stupid mass movie.
I tend to like it a little bit more now.
I saw it the one time, and that was plenty for me, and I really didn't care for it. But whatever. Yeah. I know some people like it, and that's fine. So we get to the end where she walks onto the beach, which I think she has the acetone with her.
Yeah.
And, you know, and people are walking around the beach like normal people.
Oh, and she has, like, clean, like, vestments on. She puts, like, a clean robe on.
Yes. And, you know, and so then... She starts, she kind of looks up and she sees kind of, again, like that tunnel look that.
Oh, yeah, that sky's opening up and it looks like
a funnel of some sort. Yeah. You know, like it's there. Okay, this is it.
Like the heavens are opening
up. Heavens are opening up for me. And so she.
And I'm going to ascend.
Yes.
So you can hear all the background voices. It's like, what is she doing? You know,
what is that?
Let's. Stop her before
stop
she...
Stop her. Yeah, like, well, I think, yes.
Because they know what's coming. They see her pouring, you know, it almost looks like the acetone looks like gasoline.
Yes.
You know, because she's just pouring it all over her.
Or what, it wasn't the acetone that she did?
It was acetone.
Because it means flammable.
Right.
Whatever's flammable, she's pouring on her. And
the little sticker had the flames on it.
Yes, it did.
And then she takes out the lighter that wouldn't light any other time.
Mind you, all the people on the beach...
Oh, and she has her wings.
See, we're seeing it again. I her wings, and we're seeing it, I guess, from her
perspective.
Her perspective, that all these people are kind of there in awe.
They're in awe, and then
to witness this.
Then they all like fall to their knees.
Yes,
like almost like in reverence of her presence. It's like, oh, you know, she's an angel of God at this point, and let's bow down to
Saint Maud.
Yeah, Saint Maud.
we're gonna bow to Saint Maud.
But that's and it's funny too because everybody was closer proximity to her.
Yeah.
But in reality, they weren't. You know, everybody had kind of like they were a little bit standoffish.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Whoa, I think I would be too. If some random person walks onto a beach and starts pouring something.
Yeah.
And has a light. Oh hell no.
And then she's clicking the lighter, and then it engulfs her in flames, and then she's like smiling.
Yeah.
And it's got that CGI flame on her.
Yeah.
Where it's almost like she's glowing. She's an angel. Yeah. And then it looks like she's starting to ascend, you know, with her wings and the sky's opening. Everybody's on their knees and they're like, you know, ha.
Yeah.
But then the last flash.
Which is reality.
Which is reality. And
she's burning alive.
She's burning alive and screaming.
Yeah, that's literally a second or two, and then it ends.
And then it cuts to black.
Dude, I thought the ending was brilliant.
Yeah.
I really did. Like, I was like, I felt like I got everything that I needed from this. Because I knew none of this was really happening. I knew it was in her head. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that we get that brief glimpse of her burning alive. Burning alive in pain.
Right.
And, you know, and then it ends.
Yep.
You know, and so, yeah, no, I...
Tragic movie.
It is a tragic movie, man. I mean, but I like the movie. Right. I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it. I would actually... It's tough with me because there are a lot of movies I just won't watch again, you know. And I would watch this again because I want to pick up all the little things that I don't think I initially picked up when we watched this.
Right.
But no, I thought it was a very good movie. I would absolutely recommend this to someone.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, that's Saint Maud.
It is Saint Maud.
You know, anything else? I was trying to think back if we missed on anything. I think we talked about most of the. I know we jumped around a bit, but
right,
that happens. You know, I'm not going to remember everything in order, people. I'm too fucking old.
Right.
But yeah, man. I thought Rose Glass did. I think she wrote and directed this. I think for her first feature film, she really knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, and she has another one coming up. What is it? Lies. What's it called?
It's more of a thriller. Is that what it is or no?
I think so. I think it's shot, but it's not released yet.
Okay. I looked at the cast. I'm like, yeah, well, no, it's definitely.
Oh, Love Lies Bleeding.
Love Lies Bleeding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it seems like it has Kristen Stewart, Jenna Malone, Dave Franco, Ed Harris.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be curious to see, you know, if it follows suit with what, you know, Saint Maud did. Like, is she going to stick with her you know, the style that she, you know, right. that she has, you know, is she going to stick with, you know, a certain feel or, you know,
Oh, interesting. I was just kind of looking up, Love Lies Bleeding. It says a romance fueled by ego, desire, and the American dream. I wonder if it's of a, you know, like a female romance.
Oh, interesting.
Which, huh. you know, has, that kind of with Saint Maud, there's yeah. that, those feelings of
For sure.
a female love.
Yep. Uh huh.
So interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else, man?
Nothing else I can think of.
I don't think so either. It's a good movie.
Yeah.
People check it out. You know, give it a shot. Give it a, you know, give it a watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, man. Well, thanks for coming on out, bud. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Everyone, if you stuck around, we appreciate you listening. And everyone, take care.
Bye-bye.
You listened all the way to the end. We appreciate that. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Ear for Fear Podcast, Twitter at Ear for Fear, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at Ear for Fear Podcast. You can also check out our website, earforfear.com. There we list news and events. We're available on all the main platforms, so make sure you tell a friend. We hope you come back and get an earful.